Lowe's knows that saving is always top of mind, especially this season. That's why we've picked some great deals for early Black Friday. Get free select DeWalt, Kobalt, or Craftsman tools when you buy a select battery or combo kit. More tools? Why not? Plus, we've got select pre-lit artificial Christmas trees starting at $59.98 because it's never too early to think Christmas. Get Black Friday prices without the crowds. Lowe's, we help. You save. While supplies last, selection varies by location. At Lowe's, this Veterans Day and every day, verified military members, veterans, and their spouses get automatic silver status in MyLowe's Rewards with free standard shipping, plus 10% off eligible purchases with no annual limit. It's one way we honor and give back to those who have served and still do. Learn more now at lowes.com/military. 10% discount can't be combined with another offer. Exclusions, terms, and conditions apply. Loyalty program subject to terms and conditions. Details at lowes.com/terms. Subject to change.
Okay, let's get into this. Today we're doing a deep dive into, well, a really perplexing and frankly deeply unsettling case. It's one of those incidents that just fundamentally challenges how we think about memory, about identity even. Well, reality itself.
Yeah.
And the sources we're using here, they don't just tell a chilling story. They offer this unique, almost clinical way of looking at the unexplained, like a recovered file documented with this eerie precision that somehow makes it even stranger.
That's right. The main source is titled The Only Confirmed Case of Reincarnation, which is, you know, a provocative title right off the bat.
That's really makes you lean in.
It does. And it presents the details in this really compelling, if disturbing, way. Mm-hmm. But to really get the feel of this case, we're also looking at two other key documents, the Inspector Story Production Guide and the Principles of Unseen Horror.
And these aren't typical history books or anything.
Not at all. Think of them more like field manuals or maybe operational guides for documenting really bizarre incidents. They push for this specific forensic approach.
Forensic? How so?
They focus on empirical observation, the psychological side of things, the impact of the unexplained, and they deliberately avoid easy answers. It's that method that makes them so useful for Mary's case. Not just what happened, but how the details are presented to maximize that unsettling feeling.
Got it.
So our mission today is really to unpack this specific incident, Mary's story, and see how these meticulously recorded details echo the principles of what these guides call unseen horror.
All right, so let's set the scene. Where does this anomaly begin?
It starts in 1939 in a small town, Goopersville, Indiana. Kind of an unassuming place, really.
Goopersville doesn't exactly scream cosmic mystery.
Right, and that's the point. A young couple has a daughter, Mary, in her first few years. Totally normal. Completely ordinary by all accounts.
Nothing strange at all.
Nothing. Which makes what happens next so much more jarring. The sources kind of frame it like a cold open, just dropped you into ordinary life before the weirdness hits.
Okay, so that ordinariness is crucial then.
Incredibly crucial. Because it just amplifies the shock when the first big anomaly appears. Mm-hmm. Around age 3, Mary starts talking.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not baby talk, which is what her parents assumed, naturally. It's described as strange words that no one could understand.
Okay.
And as she gets a little older, it becomes undeniable. She's speaking fluent Chinese.
Fluent at age 3.
Fluent.
Yeah.
Like full sentences, proper intonation, not just mimicking sounds. And here's the kicker. The family. No Chinese heritage. None.
No connection whatsoever.
Zero connection.
Yeah.
No exposure to the language, never traveled, didn't know anyone who spoke it. It's this complete disconnect from her environment.
Wow.
And that's right where that unexplained principle kicks in. The horror comes from things being never explained, only hinted at. The sheer impossibility of it creates this immediate tension.
A 3-year-old in rural Indiana speaking Chinese. It's astonishing.
And it didn't stop there, did it? The mystery just got deeper. Oh, much deeper. It went from tension to just total bewilderment for the parents. Understandably, they're baffled, right? They're looking for any explanation.
So they consulted experts.
They did. Language experts. And what they confirmed was, frankly, even more bizarre. It escalated things again.
How so?
Mary's Chinese wasn't just fluent. It included ancient phrases and dialects that no modern child would know.
Ancient dialects.
Exactly. Think about that. Not just the language, but specific, historical, complex forms of it. How does a child born in Goopersville in 1939 suddenly access that without any learning, any exposure?
It's impossible, that level of detail, that specific knowledge. I mean, how does that kind of contradiction fit into this idea of unseen horror?
That's a really central question because it's not just a curiosity, right? It's like it's an attack on our basic understanding of how we learn things, how memory works, what makes up us.
Right, our experience.
Exactly. If language, especially ancient dialects, can just appear without being taught or experienced in this life, it throws everything we assume about consciousness into question. The unseen hoarder principles, they stress that the really unsettling stuff isn't about monsters jumping out. It's about taking our need for order, for explanation, and just denying it. Systematically.
Leaving you hanging.
Completely. Mm. Mary's ancient Chinese isn't just a weird fact. It's a massive disruption. It hints that maybe our minds are connected to things, to information, far beyond our own lives. It challenges the idea of a single contained identity.
That's deeply unsettling, the idea that reality might be more porous.
Precisely. It's not just about one strange kid. It's about the possibility that the boundaries we assume are there aren't quite so solid.
Okay, so this linguistic thing is happening, but then her behavior changes too, right? It moves beyond just language.
Yes, it escalates. It shifts from this strange ability into something more like a compulsion, an inexplicable drive.
And that leads to the moment with the map. Tell us about that.
Right, the map. This is a real turning point. One day, Mary, apparently with total certainty, points to this old map, another kind, sort of faded, maybe tucked away somewhere. Mm. And she just points to a spot and says, "Take me here."
It's like that.
Just like that. And the place she points to, a small remote village in China.
From Goobersville.
Imagine her parents. This little kid, who shouldn't know China from Indiana on a map, points to this specific tiny village and demands to go.
The impossibility of it.
It's staggering. How does she have that precise geographical knowledge? It's not a vague wish. It's this urgent, focused demand.
Yeah.
Like, she knows this place.
And this fits that slowly escalating pattern you mentioned.
Perfectly. Each strange event builds on the last one. The mystery deepens. The pressure on the parents increases.
Somehow, they actually agree to do it. They agree to take her.
They do. What? The source describes them as desperate. And you have to imagine, making that kind of trip in the late 1930s, early 40s, international travel wasn't like today.
It was a massive undertaking. Expensive, difficult.
Huge. All based on their young daughter, speaking ancient Chinese, pointing at a map, it seems almost irrational.
But the source presents it differently.
Yeah, it's framed less as irrationality and more like they were compelled, like they were caught up in something bigger, driven by this force emanating from Mary. It feels almost fated.
That idea of the unseen dictating actions.
Exactly. The guides talk about that, how the unexplained doesn't just puzzle you, it can force your hand. When your reality is shattered like that, logic can go out the window. You just want answers, or you feel pulled along.
Like links in a chain.
Precisely. The Despector Story Production Guide calls it documenting the chains of consequence. Mary points, the parents agree. They're pulled deeper into the anomaly. The difficulty of the journey itself just highlights how strong that pull must have been.
So they undertake this incredible journey. They get to China, to the general areas she pointed to. What happens then? Did things become clearer?
Not clearer, just more specific.
Yeah.
And stranger. They're on a train traveling through the countryside.
Okay.
And Mary, with apparently no landmarks or anything she could recognize visually, suddenly insists they stop.
Stop the train.
Right there. In the middle of nowhere. Not, let's get off at the next station. Just stop here.
How?
That's the question, isn't it? It's like she has this internal compass locked onto a very specific spot, a place she shouldn't know, couldn't know. It's hyper-specific knowledge.
Almost instinctual.
Or like a memory resurfacing, a memory of a journey taken before. Mm. It really pushes the unseen aspect. Where is this guidance coming from?
Okay, so the train stops somehow. They get off. And then?
And then there's no hesitation. Mary immediately leads them. Not wandering, not searching, straight to an old farmhouse.
She knew the way?
Seemingly, yes. Walks right up to the door and starts knocking furiously.
Yeah.
Like she's impatient to get inside, like she belongs there.
The urgency. That must have been incredibly unsettling for the parents. Watching their daughter act like she's finally home in a place they've never seen.
Absolutely. And this is where it tips into real psychological horror. Palpable dread. An elderly man answers the door.
And
rushes right past him. Inside. No hesitation. Her parents just follow, stunned. Imagine witnessing that your child's immediate, unprompted familiarity with a total stranger and a strange house.
It defies logic.
Completely. And the horror comes from just showing it, not explaining it. Like the principal's guide says, imagery carries tension, not exposition. You see her go in, you feel the parent's shock, and your mind just races with questions. What is this connection?
And then comes the physical proof, almost, the object.
Yes. Inside the farmhouse, Mary walks straight to a particular spot on a wall. Again, no searching.
She knows exactly where to go.
Pulls a brick out of the wall,
uh-huh.
And behind it, there's a hidden space.
Wow.
And from that space, she takes out a small, dusty doll.
The doll.
The doll, this tangible thing.
Yeah.
Found in a hidden spot she couldn't possibly know about. It becomes this concrete anchor for the whole impossible story.
A physical artifact of a memory that shouldn't exist, that thread or clue the sources mention.
Exactly. It grounds the strangeness. In unseen horror, these objects, they aren't fully explained, but they're undeniable. They make the impossible feel solid, real.
Which leads right into the climax of the account.
The climax.
Yeah.
Which is designed purely to leave you cold. Mary, holding this doll she just found, she turns to the elderly man, the one who opened the door.
Uh-huh.
And she says, softly apparently, "Don't you remember me? This was mine."
Jilling.
The source material says the room fell silent, and what Mary said next left everyone frozen in place.
Mm-hmm.
But it stops there.
It doesn't tell you what she said next.
No. It deliberately leaves it hanging.
Yeah.
That unresolved moment is the horror. It's a perfect example of dead air is not a gap. It's tension. The silence, the lack of explanation, that's the entire point. You're left haunted by the implications.
Wow. What an utterly bizarre and, yeah, deeply unsettling story. The language, the journey, the farmhouse, the doll, and then that final devastating question. It really does feel like a tear in the fabric of things.
It really does. And you can see how it perfectly hits all those points from the unseen horror principles. It relies on suggestion, ambiguity. It never explains, only hints.
Right.
It focuses squarely on the psychological impact, that impossible contradiction of identity. And it leaves you not with an answer, but with this profound, disturbing question.
That feeling of brushing against something bigger.
Something bigger that refuses to be seen clearly. Just a fragment, a glimpse. The guides suggest these aren't just weird one-offs, but maybe hints of a whole other system operating beneath our reality. Undermining what we think it means to be alive, to have a single past.
Which really brings us to the final thought for you, listening. What does it actually mean when history, or maybe another life, pushes through so strongly, so inexplicably, in a child from Goobersville, Indiana?
Yeah.
What are the implications of a case like this presented almost as confirmed for how we understand consciousness, identity, even time itself, especially when the answers just seem to stay, well, terrifyingly out of reach, leaving you just with the echo of her words, "Don't you remember me?"